In this episode, Katie Singer and Ashley Smokler discuss capital gains tax. Their conversations include what capital gains tax is, how you calculate any gains, and when you need to pay any tax that arises.
Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Accountancy on Prescription. I'm Katie Singer, one of the partners here at RBP, and today I'm joined by my colleague Ashley, who's one of our tax managers. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Katie.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good. So we thought it would be nice to chat to you today about capital gains tax, something we get asked about quite a lot. And we just thought it might be a short, nice one to listen to, just to get the basics out there. So if any of you have got any assets or are thinking about selling properties or even investing in properties, this might be something that's worthwhile to listen to. So I guess we'll just hit straight to it on what capital gains tax actually is.
So capital gains tax basically is a tax that's paid on any profit made on the sale of an asset which is sold by an individual at a profit.
Yeah, so it's different to income tax, isn't it? Because when I think about tax, I always think about classic income tax paying 20%, 40%. But this is a different tax in itself, isn't it?
This is totally different. It is related to your level of income in a particular year. So the year in which you make your gain, you will be taxed to CGT according to whether you have any basic rate or band available to you. So the tax rates are different. You might be able to utilize some of the basic rate band.
Yeah. So what Ashley is saying there is if you are effectively 20% taxpayer, you pay a lower rate of capital gains tax, and we'll come to the rates in a minute. And if you're a higher rate taxpayer, you'll pay, as it would sound, a higher rate of capital gains tax. And later on in the podcast, we'll come to if there's been any recent changes. But I mean, you would probably agree with me, Ashley, capital gains tax is, I guess, a generous tax. Would you consider it that? I mean, there's been lots of talk for years and years that capital gains tax could be increased because the rates, as we're going to come on to, are relatively low compared to income tax. Would you agree or maybe disagree?
No, I do agree. And of course, generally, you would kind of expect, just by its own definition, a capital gain is where you've had a property or an asset that's increased in value. So the chances are, if you've held an asset for a length of time, say in excess of 10 years, you're likely to have made a sizable gain, and to be paying relatively lower rates of tax on that gain could be seen as being beneficial to you. So the rates are pretty beneficial, and there are allowances as well, which are in addition to your own personal allowance for income tax purposes.
Yeah, so talking of allowances, let's talk about the capital gains tax annual exemption allowance, because there's been a lot of movement on that in recent years. So why don't you just run us through what it is and how it's changed?
So a couple of years ago, for the 22-23 tax year, your annual exemption limit was £12,300 per individual. Any rate I mention in this particular section are halved if you are a trust. But for certainly for an individual, £12,300 was the annual exemption for 22-23. Last year, for 23-24, which are the tax returns that we'll be sorting out in the near future for you, your annual exemption was reduced to £6,000. And with effect from the 6th of April 24, it's going down to £3,000.
So it's quite an aggressive drop. It stayed at 12,300 or around the 12,000 mark for quite a few years.
Yeah, I believe that it's likely that the exemption is going to be phased out entirely. Over a length of time, nobody knows. And obviously with the government possibly going to change in the next 12 months or even sooner, the chances are, I think, that at some point it will be phased out completely.
Yeah. And a lot of the capital gains discussions we'll have today are generally going to be about larger assets, i.e. property. But there are some smaller assets, and many people would have been completely caught. You know, they wouldn't have had any capital gains tax to pay if the allowance was 12,300. But with that allowance going down to 3,000, actually, there will be a much wider group of people who will be caught under it. So it is just something to think about, especially when some of the assets we mention later on, they might be relevant to you because it isn't just property. Although, having said that, that segues me nicely into the next point, which is generally, we see capital gains most crop up when we're talking about property. But there are two different elements of property and tax rates, aren't there? The difference between residential properties and commercial, or for a lot of our clients, business assets. So I think we should just discuss those and the differences and how capital gains impacts the two different scenarios.
Okay, so on residential properties, which are basically not the property that is owned and used as a private residence by the individual selling it, you will be taxed on the capital gain, again, on the increase in value between when you originally bought it and when you come to sell it. Once again, if you've got any of your basic rate band available to you. So basically, that's if your income in a particular year is less than £50,270, you will have an element of basic rate band that's still available to you. And any part of your capital gain that falls under that £50,270, where you have that extra basic rate band available to you, that part of your capital gain will be taxed at 18%. Where you have no basic rate band available, or you are simply a higher rate taxpayer or an additional rate taxpayer, up to the 5th of April 24, you'll be taxed at 28% on that amount of your capital gain that falls over the basic rate threshold. That is reducing to 24% with effect from the 6th of April 24.
Yeah, and as I mentioned at the beginning, quite a generous in inverted commas, quite a generous tax compared to income tax, which if you're a high rate taxpayer, you're paying 45% tax on your income. I feel that there has been pressure on the government to increase the tax rate. So I was quite surprised to see it being reduced. But then, of course, if you actually do the numbers with the tax rate being reduced, but then again, the annual exemption being reduced as well, the differential would probably, especially for certain value of assets, isn't going to make the hugest of differences. But yeah, I was surprised to see it go down.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally.
Actually, you said something as well that's really useful to touch upon. You mentioned it not being your main home. While this isn't necessarily about capital gains, it's worth mentioning. When you have your own house, you don't pay tax on it, do you, when you sell it? You know, your main residence.
Correct. So your main residence will always be capital gains exempt. And even where you're selling a residential property that is no longer your private residence, but perhaps was at some stage, you're able to claim a relief called private residence relief, which means that the period of your private residence in that property falls out of the capital gains equation and is CGT exempt, as is the last 9 months of ownership. So if you've owned a property for, let's say, 10 years, you lived in it for 8 years, you would lose 8 years and 9 months out of the 10 years of gain. Mm-hmm. The gain is still calculated over the course of the whole period of ownership, but you get relief for, in that circumstance, 8 years and 9 months. Now, if you've owned the property for a longer period of time, lived in it for a less time, for instance, so that you've maybe rented it out for 6 or 7 years before you sell it, again, so you get the 9 months worth of relief in ordinary circumstances. If you happen to be an older individual who is now resident in a care home, or if you happen to be a registered disabled individual, instead of 9 months at the end of the ownership period, you get the last 3 years. Mm. So that's quite generous as well. But it all depends. And that's why no two capital gains calculations will ever be the same.
Yeah. And also off the back of, you know, calculating periods when you potentially have rented it, we do always say to individuals, especially in your own home that you live in, there are sometimes things to consider if you want to claim a room in your house for business purposes. You know, here, our clients listening, they will know that we claim a use of home allowance on a personal tax return. Things can complicate capital gains tax potentially further down the line. Again, as Ashley said, every situation is different. If you're actually converting a room in your house or using a whole room in your house for a business purpose, because that can change certain elements of capital gains tax. When we're talking about residential properties, because again, there's a difference between residential and business or commercial properties in terms of reporting capital gains. How does one go about it if they did sell an investment flat that they had, for example?
So regulations came in a couple of years ago where you need to report electronically. There's no manual submission of these capital gains tax reports anymore.
So historically, was it on the tax return? Did you just put it on your annual tax return?
Absolutely. And that's the first time the revenue would ever necessarily have found out about any sale that had taken place. So if, for instance, you happen to sell a property on the 6th of April in a particular tax year, you wouldn't be paying the tax until the 31st of January, basically 21 months later. Changes came about a couple of years ago where it was necessary originally to report the gain and pay the capital gains tax within 30 days of the completion date.
Wow,
which was always a very quick turnaround. Yeah, it's now been extended to 60 days, but the effect is the same. So it's a 60-day turnaround. The individual has to have a government gateway account in their own name. So every individual that's thinking of selling a property should probably take steps to get that sorted sooner rather than later, because there are sometimes issues with getting these things sorted out. So you need a government gateway account. Once you've got a government gateway account, you then need to create within that a capital gains or UK property account. And at that point, between ourselves and the individual, we can sort out reference numbers, which basically go between the two parties. Mm-hmm. And then if obviously the client is wishing to have help from us, we will be able to make that submission on their behalf. But basically, as soon as the submission goes into the revenue, you're also asked if you want to pay the tax immediately or at a later date. But either way, you've only got the 60-day window to make that payment.
Yes, it's just something to be aware of. I know, so if you're listening and you know that, I don't know, you've had investment properties over the time you've been alive and you sold a flat or a property 10 years ago and you remembered, oh, it was fine, I just told my accountant when I did my tax return, just bearing in mind that the rules have changed. So if you do know that you've sold a property recently, I mean, I am assuming, Ashley, that lawyers do tell individuals when this takes place, you know, you must report the gain within 60 days. But in case they haven't and you're listening, please do be aware of it, because in the first few years after the rules changed, I know we had quite a few clients who had missed the reporting deadline because they themselves just were not aware that there was this, at the time, very short 30-day time frame. I'm very glad to hear it was extended, because it was just too short, in my opinion.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, you've only got to go away or leave the country for 2 weeks and it becomes a real struggle to get it done. So yeah, so that's one thing that we hope that you will take away. Okay, so we've talked about the residential side, but now let's touch upon different properties. So commercial properties, or as many of you will be listening, a business asset, i.e. your surgery. So how's the reporting different for that?
So as far as reporting the sale of a commercial property is concerned, that is simply done via your individual tax returns and via the accounts of the practice.
Yeah. And it goes on your tax return at the end of the year and you pay your tax on the 31st of January, along with all your other tax for that year.
That's right. Yeah.
Something I get asked about frequently, and I don't know whether this is more a question for me because I'm in accounts other than tax. I don't know if you get asked it as much as I do, but what happens when you dispose of your surgery? Because there's this tax relief called business asset disposal relief, or many of you may have heard of it called entrepreneur's relief. I mean, you get it for other items, but for those listening, it will be mainly relevant for the business asset, although it does come into play for shares as well. So for the surgery, if you dispose of your surgery upon or after retirement, you can claim business asset disposal relief. And what that does is it reduces the tax liability down at a rate of only 10%. It's a flat rate of 10%. There are a couple of rules that do have to be hit for it to apply. For example, we always say you should really sell before retirement or before leaving the business. There are caveats to that. For example, significantly reducing your activity or your share in the business, although that can be a little bit riskier. But this is something that we do see very, very frequently. So if you're listening today and you're a GP partner who owns your surgery and you're approaching retirement and you own your building, whether it's on your own or jointly with your partners, at the point of your retirement, if you were to sell the building a week or two, a month or two, even a year or two later, the gains on that building are calculated And then any tax to pay is a flat rate of 10%. Now, for many people listening, and I have done calculations before, sometimes the differential of the tax between 10% and 20% isn't huge. And sometimes individuals listening say, actually, do you know what I would save in the tax? I'd actually gain more hanging on to the property and receiving rental income every year. So it's not always going to be the case that you will want to sell, but for many of you, you might be obligated as part of your agreement or your partnership agreement, for example, but it's just something to consider. And something else to consider, and this is more unique, but you also have to consider capital gains tax if you are disposing of parts of a building. So let's talk about a scenario. So let's say two of you own the building equally. There's two partners in this practice and you own the building equally. And two new partners join your surgery. So there are now four of you and these new partners want to buy in. So doctors A and B at the moment own 50-50 each. And they're going to sell or transfer 50% of their ownership or 25% of the building to the new partners. Essentially, at that moment in time, you have disposed of or sold or however you want to understand it, a portion of your building. And at that moment in time, there is a chargeable event and there would potentially need to be capital gains calculated on your tax return. So it is something that the accountants or yourselves need to consider if you are changing the ownership of a building. Obviously, if you're buying more, or say you go from three partners owning down to two, you're buying more. But if you're increasing the number of owners, you're selling some of the bit you currently own, and that is a chargeable event potentially. It might come under the annual allowance. It used to often, but it might not in the current exemption. So just something to be aware of. So having discussed the property, there are other things we pay capital gains tax on, but why don't we just go through the actual calculation of capital gains tax? So what it is and how you actually calculate it, what the numbers that we use to get to the chargeable gain.
Okay, so a very, very basic calculation of capital gains would be the proceeds received at sale, less any incidental expenses such as solicitor's fees, et cetera, et cetera. You then deduct the amount you paid originally for the property or asset and any incidental expenses of when you purchased it. So, for instance, with a property, that's going to include things like stamp duty, solicitor's fees and agent's fees. Also, with a property, if you've enhanced the value of the property in any way, such as adding an extension or a loft conversion or something along those lines, anything to do with adding value to the property that isn't everyday wear and tear, such as painting and decorating, which wouldn't be included, but any enhancement costs, they are all included in calculating the capital gain.
Yeah, so like if you pop an extension on, the cost of that reduces it effectively.
Absolutely, yeah.
So then once you have your gain, you would take off your allowance, right? So at the moment, it's 6,000. So you've got your gain. Let's pretend it's a number. Let's make it a nice, easy number. Let's say it's £16,000 is the gain.
Yep. And then you deduct the £6,000 annual exemption, and then you pay tax according to the rate that you have left available to you, if there's any of the basic rate band. But assuming you're a higher rate taxpayer, you take off the 6,000, leaves you with 10,000 chargeable, and that will be taxed at 28%.
Currently, exactly. So something that we always get asked, especially to do with property when they're talking about capital gains, is, but I've got a very large mortgage. You know, I've still got a mortgage. Why are you telling me I've got a gain when I basically hardly own it because I've got so much of a mortgage? Does the mortgage come into the capital gains tax calculation at all?
No, the mortgage is irrelevant for capital gains purposes. How you fund the purchase of the property in the first place is entirely your issue. Your starting point is the value of the property when you bought it, and the end point is the value that you sell it at.
And in theory, if we use big numbers, so let's say I bought a property for 200,000. I mean, I know that this is an unrealistic example, but I bought a property for 200,000. And at that moment in time, I took out a £200,000 mortgage. 5 years later, I come to sell the property for 400,000 and I've still got £100,000 left on the mortgage. That 100,000 is, by the by, I still need to give that back to the bank because I owe it. So I give the £100,000 back. My gain is £200,000.
Absolutely.
I get my annual exemption. I pay the tax on it. So although I'm passing back £100,000, I'm still going to have extra money in my hand at the end of it because I've still made a gain. Of course, if I sold that property for 200,000, there would be no gain.
So yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly. So I'd still walk away with effectively £100,000. I just wouldn't have to pay any tax on it. I'd just have to give the rest of the money back to the bank. But that does come up. I think that's the question that crops up the most, I would say, is why is the mortgage never considered when I calculate my capital gains? So we've talked a lot about property, but we should just briefly touch upon capital gains on other things. So there's capital gains to pay on other types of assets, aren't there? So things like shares or cryptocurrencies or even things like a small personal possession. So why don't we just have a quick chat about those? They're less of a, I'd say, important issue compared to property, but why don't we briefly mention those?
So the capital gains situation with personal assets such as jewellery, artwork and antiques, you wouldn't need to report anything if the gain was less than £6,000. HMRC just aren't interested.
Do you know what? Actually, something you've just said popped into my head, and this is quite relevant as well, I think. When we're talking about jewellery and antiques and things like that, often those items are inherited. Whilst this is not a podcast about inheritance tax, in fact, there was a great one that was done a few weeks ago. So do go back and listen to that one. That was with my business partner, Kate. But when we're talking about jewellery and things, often those might be inherited. So you may have inherited them from a grandparent. And a question often gets asked, do I pay a capital gains tax when I inherit these items? No, you don't pay capital gains tax when you inherit them. But if you were to sell them in the future, that would then become a capital gains tax event, potentially. Again, we're all talking about the value and the market value at the point in which you received it, but there isn't actually capital gains tax to pay at the point in which you inherit. So it just popped into my head when you were talking about possessions and assets in that manner.
So we've also got a situation where somebody may have shares that they may have bought at some point, and cryptocurrencies similarly, any sales of shares of cryptocurrencies that result in a gain. Again, you have your annual exemption as long as you haven't used it elsewhere. And then the tax is again calculated, but this time it's using the 10% and 20% rates rather than the higher rates on properties.
Yeah. And actually, it's a relatively new-ish world, crypto. And we have had a couple of clients come to us recently and say, you know, what am I supposed to be doing? Am I supposed to be reporting this? Yes. You know, throughout the year, if you have cryptocurrency or you have investments in crypto, you do need to be aware that if you are transferring any currencies across to other or out, that is, again, a chargeable event, a chargeable gain. And it's not particularly straightforward to work out. It's not the same. I mean, you might disagree, but I find the calculation far more complicated. With a property, you have a purchase price, you have a sales price. With cryptocurrencies and shares, they have slightly different ways of calculating because they have base costs, and it just is a slightly added complication. So if you are concerned or you are worried, always check with your accountant or your tax advisor how those gains should be calculated, because often they aren't just a straight A and B calculation. There are more complexities to it, so it's a little bit more tricky. I think the only other thing that is probably worth mentioning is we've mentioned the annual exemption allowance. And when we think about taxes, often we talk about being able to use reliefs in the future and in the past. So the annual exemption allowance you mentioned, it was 12,300 and now it's at 6,000 and we know it's going down to 3,000. If I don't use it, can I carry it forward and use it next year?
No, unfortunately, capital gains annual exemptions are limited to the year in which the gains occur. You won't be able to carry any of that forward. However, one thing that you can do is we've been talking entirely about capital gains. You might be asking, well, what happens if I make a loss on a sale? If you make a loss, those losses can be realized against gains made in that same year. And if you don't fully utilize them, they can be carried forward until they can be utilized. And that doesn't have to be the following year. It can be 10 years down the line. As long as you've reported it on your tax return, the revenue will have a record of the losses and you'll be able to utilize them against any gain in a future year.
Can it only be offset against capital gains? I can't offset it against income tax.
No, you can't offset it against income tax.
Okay. So it just sits there. And let's say, for example, I do make a capital loss and I never in the future buy any other assets that incur me again. It's gone. The relief is gone, has it? It's just gone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a shame. Often in these situations, there will be something that one could offset it against in the future.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got some kind of residential business where you have two or three properties and you're selling them year after year after year, or if you have numerous shareholdings, that's when it comes into play. Mm.
Yeah, of course, of course. Because especially if you do have a large investment portfolio, some years they can go up and down. So you might have one year with a loss and then the next year with a very big gain, and they just go in ebbs and flows. And we do see that quite frequently.
And the revenue don't identify a loss against the same type of gain in a future year. If you've made a loss on shares, they can be offset against property gains in a future year.
Any capital gain. It's just like any a hedging capital gain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's really useful to know. So I think that covered pretty much all of the basics. We didn't want it to go into too much technical detail because I find when you're listening to a podcast, if you get really techie with numbers, it can be quite difficult to listen to. But we just thought it might be useful to put something out there, especially with the new tax year starting. Individuals might have some property sales coming up. And so we just wanted you to be aware of how you might need to consider paying those taxes should you have any. So thank you very much, Ashley, for joining me and assisting me today.
No problem at all.
And if you did enjoy this podcast, please do like and subscribe. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.